Can you hear me?
All right,
perfect. There it is. All right. So yeah, I am nervous. That being said, though I have a lot of doubt in myself, I got tons of confidence in the Lord, right? So,
amen.
And this is the extent of my preparedness for this, right? So this could be the shortest service you guys ever attended. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But where do I start? So I'm just going to start from the beginning. I was raised out in a farm in Sumas. I had what I consider a perfect childhood, right? I was fully nurtured, fully loved, fully supported, provided for in every way. And that being said, if anyone else out here can say that also, you already have a ton to be thankful for, because I have found that I'm in the minority out there. But as I said, fully supported and everything, had a great childhood, it was beautiful, went to Linden Christian School. But at about sixth grade, and if I see Miss Vanzonneveld, I can't wait to tell her this, but we did this project in sixth grade called Ultimate Questions, right? And we're doing a question on faith. And, I feel this is the first time the Lord ever spoke to me. I didn't know it then, but I'm doing this question on faith, and I heard something clicked in me and said, hey, faith is the key. So at about 12 years old is when I decided, all right, I'm going to have faith. And it was a decision that the Lord nurtured in me, through everything. So that being said, I want to start this out, though. This is not my story, right? This is a story of a faithful God to an unfaithful sinner, because he was there the whole time, right? So that being said, I go through school, going to high school, and there was little glimpses of addiction in high school. But luckily, I had such a love for sports that by my senior year, I got it figured out, because I didn't want to get kicked off the team my senior year. And so my senior year was good. I didn't do anything. But then I went to college. And in college is when the roots of that addiction took hold. I smoked weed every day, and I drank alcohol every night. And, to the point where I failed out of school. And so I come home because I failed out of school, and I continue this behavior. But, on the surface, I'm looking pretty good, right? Life progresses, I get married, I have, two wonderful kids, I'm running my own business, so things are looking good, but I'm smoking weed every day, I'm drinking every night, and I'm basically doing cocaine and ecstasy every chance I get, right? On the surface, things are looking pretty good, right? And then one day, which was pretty normal, I was very hungover on my way to work, and one of my employees, I'm getting coffee, and I says, I'm like, oh man, I'm really hungover. And he says, oh, well, hey. He sprinkles a little something in my coffee, right? Looked like salt maybe or sugar, right? I knew what it was basically, but I'd never done meth before. And he says, talk to me in 20 minutes. So 20 minutes later, the same feeling I got the first time I ever got drunk, the first time I ever smoked weed, the first time I ever did coke or anything, right? The first thought that went through my head was, this is what's been missing in my life. Even though, like I said, I had it pretty good, there was nothing missing in my life, but I just remember thinking, I could feel like this all the time, right? But I'm holding it together on the surface, right? I'm still married, I got this business, and I remember when I realized that I was an addict was, I got to the job site, and I send my crew out to work. I had been up for 3 days now, and I was out of meth, and I'm sitting in my car trying to get a hold of a dope dealer, and I'm in there for 2 hours because he ain't answering. I'm not going to work. My guys are working, and that's when it hit me. It's like, ooh, this might be a bit of a problem. This might be something you're going to have to deal with at some point in your life. So that realization came pretty early, right? But I held it together, and I held it together for one reason, my mom. I knew that it would kill her if I did what I wanted to do, right? Which was basically sacrifice everything and go run the streets. So not long after that, she passed away, right? My mom passed away, so I remember feeling like a dog just let off the chain. I was like, here we go, I'm going to go do what I want to do, you know, selfish. You know, and the broken addict mind, you know, in my mind, I justified it by saying, hey, you know, my family's better off without me, right? Yeah, there's lots of brokenness in the mind of an addict. But God was there the whole time, you know what I mean? Because, like, at some point, I didn't talk to my kids or come home for about a month, but then something said, hey, even if you're getting high, your kids, you know, you need to be there. So, you know, that was the Lord. Another time the Lord spoke to me. But then, as we're going, you know, I sacrificed my family. I sacrificed my business. I sacrificed my marriage at the altar of drugs, right? And I'm running the streets. And, you know, there was another time the Lord spoke to me. He was there. My kids are going to bed at their uncle and aunt's house. And, you know, neither parent is there. And I remember thinking, oh, do my kids think I don't love them? You know what I mean? Because I'm not there. Someone else is tucking them in at night. You know, and that was the Lord speaking to me. So I set an alarm on my phone, and I called them every day at 7 o'clock at night and asked them, you know, how was your day? What did you learn at school? Don't forget to say your prayers. You know, and if it wasn't for that, I feel our relationship probably wouldn't be what it is today because it's pretty amazing right now. But that was the Lord being faithful to me. So 10 years after that, right? 10 years of selfishness, addiction, just another example of how broken the addict mind is. I sat there and I thought, I'm like, God, what makes me different? You know what I mean? Why am I so different than my siblings and all the people I grew up with, who some I know experimented with drugs, but it just didn't take like it did to me? You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, it's just not that important to them. You know what I mean? And why were drugs important to me? Well, they were really important when I didn't have any, I came to the conclusion. So the best course of action would be to become a drug dealer. Then I always have them, right? And so, I mean, that's logic, right? You know what I mean? And that way, it's not so important. I can go about my day because I will always have drugs. And I lived that way 7 years about, you know, and you get into trouble, you know, and so I get a jail sentence, I get a prison sentence, and the Lord was there again because he said, you know, I was like, I'm going to go into this and focus on the Lord. This is time for me to, you know, get connected with the Lord again. You know, because I never lost that faith, right? I would defend that faith, and I would defend the town of Linden and Linden Christian, and people would look at me like, you're sitting here shooting up dope with me. How can you do this? I'd be like, I don't know. I just know it's true, right? You know what I mean? I know that there's a God. I know that he loves me, you know, and I held on to a verse, Jeremiah 29:11, you know, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And I held on to that, you know what I mean? So you go to prison, and I get into a prayer routine in prison, and I start reading the Gospels, and then I get out of prison, right? I think I'm another example of a broken addict mind, right? I'm like, well, I had all intentions. I'm going to do good, right? I'm going to get out, and I'm only going to drink and smoke weed, right? That's clean, right? That's how addicts think. You know what I mean? If that's all you're doing, then you're clean, right? Well, that didn't work, you know what I mean? Because the second I got drunk is the second I thought it'd be a good idea to use meth or heroin, you know what I mean? Whichever, take your pick. So I get out and I go back to using, right? And it's rough, right? And now, well, I remember, well, I'm just going to go to part of the story that not very many people know, okay? This is the part of the story that where everything changed for me. And I didn't want to tell the story. Like, I got my sister, they don't even know this story because I felt in my heart I couldn't tell this story until my life validated it. You know what I mean? Like, how I live is going to prove that this really happened, right? So one night I'm driving, right, in a little red Honda down the guide, and you know, it was weird because I hadn't used for a couple days, which was really odd. I had drugs in my pocket, right? And I remember thinking, God, you know, a few fleeting thoughts. This is weird. I'm not using these drugs, right? But I'm going to go with it. You know what I mean? This is good. I'm not using it. I've got sleep. I ate for a couple days, which was very out of the norm, you know what I mean? And so I'm driving down the road, right? And I hear, I guess it's in my mind, right? It's tangible. Joey, you fool, right? I was like, yeah, you idiot, right? You're on DOC, which is Department of Corrections, basically like probation. You got a bag of dope in your pocket. You don't got a license. If you get pulled over, you're going to jail. That's what I said to myself. Then this voice says to me again, yeah, and in jail, you can't do what I need you to do. And then I went, that's weird. I mean, that's a weird thing to think to yourself, but it wasn't, you know what I mean, because it's something I'd never experienced before. And I said, I'm just going to ignore whatever this is that's going on. And that's when the voice says, Joey, you can't ignore me. You know who this is. Okay, so things got real right then. Okay, two things happened to me at that point. And I can only describe them as like spiritual emotions, right? Because they were the realest things I'd ever experienced in my life. The first thing that happened was instantly I felt exposed, naked and filthy and undeserving. Every evil desire of my heart was just exposed, you know, and I was undeserving of whatever, right? And that was hard, right? There was a lot of guilt and shame in that feeling, you know, because it was stuff that I had blocked out of my head for years, right? It was all on the table. And then literally washing over that feeling was love and comfort and grace and forgiveness and home, right? So now at this point, I'm just weeping, right? I'm trying to drive. You know what I mean? And he says, I'll get you home. And I says, why? He says, well, I'm coming to some of you that have had faith throughout everything because it's going to get tested, and I don't want you to lose it now. He says, okay. Now, I'm going to skip. There was a lot more to this, right? There's a full conversation going on. It was, I want to say, like 20 minutes, maybe a half hour. The key was to the conversation is have no fear, right? For I am with you. That was the basic theme of that conversation. Now I'm going to skip to the end of the conversation. Before I do that, those feelings, okay, I've thought about this stuff a lot, right? I've thought about that moment a lot. And I'm convinced, now this is just me, this is my theory on it, but when the Lord comes back, we are all going to experience these feelings in an instant. You know what I mean? We're going to know. And there's going to be two groups of people when that happens, because when that happens, every knee is going to bow and every tongue is going to confess. And there's going to be the people that go, thank you, Lord. You know what I mean? I'm so happy that I chose you back. And then there's going to be the group of people that are going to be like, what have I done? You know what I mean? And so that being said, skip to the end when finally I'm like, all right, what do you want me to do? You know what I mean? Like, what do you want? And he says, well, I want every soul. I want every soul. And I says, you know, and then in my mind I'm like, well, you know, murderers, child molesters, rapists, you know what I mean? And then that's when I felt the finger of God point at me and say, hey, it's not your job to judge. That's my job. You just get them to me. I says, okay, well, how do I do that? And he says, remember that love that you felt when you, you know, at the beginning. He says, yeah, he's like, just show that to everyone. Show that to every single person you meet. You know, so that's why I believe in forgiveness and I believe in grace and all the great things that come from the Lord. So that being said, I go to bed and I wake up and I'm in this, like, communication with God, right? I'm asking questions in my head, and they're being answered, right? And this has happened for about 3 days. On the third day, though, about halfway through the third day, I'm not feeling good. I'm not feeling right. I got stuff to do. I got to go to treatment for DOC, and I'm not feeling it. So I decide to squish cottons. Well, I'm not going to get into what that is, but basically I got high, right? I got high, I went about my business, and I come home, and I'm starting to come down from that high, and I ask a question, right? And nothing. There's no response. And I'm just like, oh, what have I done? What have I done? I've cut the communication, right? So I grab all my stuff, I throw it away, I go to my room, and I am crying and I am praying. I'm like, Lord, please forgive me, I'm sorry. And then the response was, see what that stuff does? It separates us, you know? And I was like, oh, you know, lesson learned. Now, did I stop using at that point? No, you know what I mean? Like, it was a few months down the road, but I got desperate, right? This experience changed who I thought God was, who I am to God, and who everyone else is to God, right? Everything changed, right? So I'm desperate to get clean at this point. You know, I'm homeless, I'm unemployed, I got a warrant out for my arrest, I'm strung out on drugs, and I decide I'm willing to do anything to get clean. So I finally have the conversation with my kids. They're 12 and 14 at the time. I had it at separate times. You know, because they're not dumb. They knew what was going on, but we never talked about it, right? It was the elephant in the room. I take them both separate. I'm like, hey, so it's obvious that your dad's not like your friend's dad's, you know, because they're not always going to jail. They got jobs. They have cars and license and stuff like that. You know, the reason I'm different is because I'm a drug addict. And what that means is if I'm not high, I'm trying to get high. I mean, that's what I'm doing. And they both said the same thing. They were like right now? You know what I mean? I was like, yeah, like right now. You know what I mean? I'm high right now. And but then, you know, I said, I need you guys' help. I need you to pray. I need accountability and all that. Hey, a month later, I went to treatment, and I haven't used since. So I hope that's a good lesson of prayer for my kids. But so everything changed. I finally make it to treatment and I get clean. Since then, the things the Lord has taught me, because getting clean obviously was just the beginning, right? And that's the beginning for any addict, right? That's not the goal. That's just the first step of building a relationship with the Lord. So now to the notes. I got the notes here. First lesson that the Lord has taught me through all this and through my addiction, like the reason why I can consider it pure joy to be an addict, was pride and how deceptive pride is. I read in Isaiah that the devil became proud. So so here's this angel who we think is the source of all evil, right? But there was a different evil that got to him first in heaven, right? And that was pride, right? And it's, if all good things that are in me come from the Lord, then what do I have to take pride in, right? And the crazy thing about I found in pride is that in our society, it's wrong not to be proud, right? Hey, be proud of where you're from. Take pride in how you look. Be proud of your kids. Be proud of your school. Be proud of your country, right? All this stuff is a gift from God. We cannot take credit for any of this stuff, right? So a lesson in, well, and if there's one thing addiction will do, it'll humble you. You know what I mean? And teach you that you're not in control of anything, right? Another thing I learned was my complete and utter dependence on God. Surrendering my will over to His will, right? I attend this group. I won't tell you what it is because we're anonymous, but we have a saying in this group that is one day at a time, right? When I first got clean, and I still do it to this day, and it's actually getting easier and easier to do this because I should probably put a disclaimer before all these lessons. I fail every day at all these lessons. These are just things I'm trying to do right now, right? But my motto was 10 minutes at a time. You know what I mean? It wasn't a whole day. Like, I just need to get through the next 10 minutes. And what I mean by get through the next 10 minutes was I need to focus on God, right? I need to do whatever it is I'm doing and say whatever I'm saying to the glory of God for the next 10 minutes. You know what I mean? And then hopefully we'll see what happens the next 20, because honestly, they're not promised to me anyway. So I'll just, because if the time comes and my time is up, I want to be doing it to the glory of God. So that means every 10 minutes. You know what I mean? So the next thing I learned in all this is patience. The Lord's timing is much better than mine. Because in the addiction, I was, I'd been at it for 10 years, and I says I had a lot of friends that were like 60, 70 years old that I would use with. I remember thinking, is that me? You know what I mean? Is this it? Is this, because it's been 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, is this what I'm going to be doing? You know, Lord, hurry it up. You know what I mean? Like, I had faith, but I definitely questioned his process, right? But for an example, since then, of how if you just have patience in the Lord's timing and not try to push things, I got to the point where I'd been clean a couple of years, and my kids are living with their grandparents, and the grandparents said to me, hey, get your own place, you can have the kids back. I'm like, all right, start looking for a place, right? I'm looking for a place. I don't want to live anywhere but Linden, and I can't afford it, right? You know what I mean? But I went into it going, you know what, Lord, you know, help me find a place. This is something I want. But if you feel you need me at Bridges of Hope, I don't know if any of you know what Bridges of Hope is, clean and sober house over there. Oh, you guys, I know you guys do. Then I guess this is where you need me, and I'm okay with that, right? And I went into it thinking that, well, you get about 3 or 4 months down the road, and you're like, am I doing this wrong? You know what I mean? Like, should I have taken that place I really can't afford and just had faith that you'll provide? You know, what am I doing wrong? But I just had patience, right? And then Bridges of Hope approaches me and says, hey, we want to downgrade to one house. Do you want to rent the one you're in? I didn't even have to move, right? I did it. We all hate moving. It couldn't have worked out better, right? And it also at work, you know what I mean? Like, there was a point when I was getting frustrated at work, but I'm like, you know what, Lord, I know this is where you want me. And then the best situation ever could have happened, and, you know, I'm just very thankful for, and even just getting out of drugs, you know what I mean? It was all in the Lord's time, you know what I mean? I don't know how else to do it. How hard is that to do? It's hard, you know what I mean? Like, I hate praying for patience because he just might teach it to me in a way, right? But then, big lesson I learned in all this. So I said I had faith throughout all this, right? And I believed in my heart that if it came down to drugs or God, right, I knew I would pick God. I believed that. Well, toward the end of my addiction, I was by myself in my room with a needle full of drugs, and I'm praying, and I'm crying, and I'm saying, Lord, give me the strength not to do this, right? And I felt the strength in my arm, right? And I pulled it away, and then I did the drugs anyway, right? I got high anyway. And I sat down, and then talk about, like, a view of yourself just getting demolished. I sat down and went, what is really going on here, right? Because I did, you know. So the lesson I learned throughout all that and pondering that moment was how easily we can start worshiping a false god without even knowing we're doing it, right? We all have a priority list in our head, right? Whatever you think about most during the day is your God, right? I mean, that's the truth of the matter. If you're not filling your mind with God at all moments, whatever you are filling your mind with is your God, you know? So what I learned through that is it doesn't have to be even drugs, and it doesn't have to be sex, and it doesn't have to be money. It can be your kids. It can be your spouse. It can be your work. These things can just as easily sneak into becoming your God as anything else, right? In fact, maybe even easier because they're good things on the surface, right? But if you're not doing these things to the glory of God, then they've become your false idol. And then the last thing, and I'll end with this, that I learned through all this is the power of prayer. If there's prayer, there's hope, right? You can, my sister is here. You could go ahead and ask her how long she was praying for me. You know, I mean, how many people came up to me in the last 3 years and said, man, we've been praying for you, right? Because your sister would come to these prayer groups or whatever and say, pray for my brother Joey, or my nephew praying for me every night. You know what I mean? I believe in the power of prayer. And an interesting story about that was I'm a member of Third Christian Reformed Church. I have been a member there. My kids were baptized there. Well, I come back to Bridges of Hope. I start going to Third Church, and the elders are like, we want to talk to you. Come to an elder meeting. I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? So I come to this elder meeting. I tell them the story I told you when the Lord spoke to me and what changed my life, right? And they're listening, and then the one elder says to me, he's like, well, when did that happen? You know what I mean? And at the time, it was like 8 months. And so I said, well, that was about 8 months ago. And he goes, oh, man. He goes, we were going through our list of members, and we came across your name, and we noticed that you hadn't been here for 10 years. You know what I mean? So we were wondering what to do with you. Do we just cross you off? But we decided to pray you back. You know what I mean? And so here I am. And they just, you know, it was another wonderful example of what prayer can do. If I'm going to close this thing out, right, what I guess I want everyone to remember would be that God wants every soul, every single person you talk to. Because the last thing we want is anyone on the day of the Lord to be like, what have I done, right? I couldn't imagine what that would feel like, you know what I mean? And that is like the biggest fear I have, is that anyone's going to have to feel that. And then I guess really Jesus says it best, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your strength, all your mind, and all your spirit. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's all I got, I guess. Thank you.